The year is 2006. I'm Zach.
I'm Charlotte.
And this is My Marvelous Year.
Marvelous Year, the comic book podcast and reading club where we go through all of the Marvel Universe from its origins to today. I'm Charlotte, your comic book rainbow belt, and today I'm joined by someone whose name is so it can be published on paper and it can't be heard on podcast, so it's gonna have to be bleeped out. It's Zach Fuck. How's it going, Zach?
Pretty good. Thank you for that introduction. I was thinking while you were doing it, it might have been just funny for you to just say my like full first and last name, and then I just bleep it around the edges, so you could just hear like Zach Beery.
Sure.
But also, speaking of that, because we read 8-Ball for extra issues, the Daniel Klaus book, like 6 months ago for our Patreon, and then it just came out on the public feed. I did, because of my favorite joke in that comic, I had written in the description that it was like, I don't remember what I called you, but I do pun names for us. And for me, it was Zach Dick, the comic.
Yeah.
And, and Dave very nicely edited that out for the public feed, which I didn't actually think of, that I might not want that out in public.
It is out in public. So perfect.
Well, that's true, but I'll probably have bleeped that. I was thinking, you know, we were talking before we recorded, like, who has an opening? And then you were like, I had one. And then I found a good one that I should have just done, which is, ooh, Warren Ellis talking about Next Wave. Have you read this? His, like, description
of the
comic? It's... Well, here's the version I would have done if I was going to do our stupid opening. I took My Marvelous Year and I stripped out all the plots, logic, characters, and sanity. It's an absolute distillation of the podcasting genre. No plot lines, characters, emotions, nothing whatsoever. It's people posing in the street for no reason. It's people getting kicked and then exploding. It's a pure podcast, and I'll fight anyone who says otherwise. And afterwards, they will explode. It's such a... it's a dorky explanation of that comic. I also didn't do any joke with it. I just replaced comic book with podcast.
Yeah. We'll talk about it. That sounds like it's from Rob Liefeld in 2023.
Yeah, it does, actually. I mildly enjoyed Next Wave, and this made me like it less, having read that.
Am I insane? Or did you...
Yes.
You read Next Wave before this?
No.
Mm-mm. Okay. So is it Dave who loves this?
Yes.
Okay, because I kind of remember the two of you guys having a conversation about it on the early episodes when I was just a listener. And, like, I didn't remember which one of you guys, if it was both, who really loved it. It's Dave who loves it, and he's not here to defend his darling, so that's perfect.
Well, when I say love it, I think he has it at 118 of his best comics of all time.
It's pretty high. You know? For his list.
It's pretty high. I mean, it's above... Oh, Charlotte. It's above Karl Barks' Ducks comics. Like...
Well, it...
No, wait, is Karl Barks the one you love, or is that...
No, it's Don Rosa. I mean, Karl Barks is like...
Charlotte. Star, oh, no. five places below Karl Barks' Ducks on the list. The Life and Times of Scrooge McDuck. I'm so sorry. Above Planetary, which I would not... have done. This list, poor Dave, you know, he wrote this.
No, don't if you start going to on his list, we're gonna be there for the
episode, exactly. But you know, he wrote this list so long ago, and he updates it so rarely, it's kind of unfair to rag on it. Anyway, he really likes this comic. He probably would be uncomfortable with that because of the Warren Ellis of it all, but or at least like uncomfortable too strongly defending this comic.
Yeah,
but I think it's okay. I had a fun time with it. We can just jump right into it, I guess.
Yeah.
We're talking Next Wave, Agents of Hate. It only ran for 12 issues. We read the first six here. for the podcast. We're also going to talk about the relaunch of Dan Slott's She-Hulk. It gets just a new volume. I'm not sure which volume it is, but the one that started in 2005, Rune 1 through 7. And then we have a Patreon edition from Justin W., who added The Thing number 8, which is also by Dan Slott. A ton of Dan Slott. When we have Dan Slott, it's like a Dan Slott only episode. It feels like.
Yeah, and it won't be the last time.
We're gonna be all slotted. I mean, I guess that's true.
God, I'll slot it out. Gross.
I really didn't like that.
You're welcome.
Anyway, yes, it's he does a lot of Spider-Man, right? That's the
also. The I don't know why exactly. Maybe it's like because they have the same thing of getting all the chances in the world of writing every single comic. But I keep mixing Peter David and Dan Slott in my mind.
Oh, come on. How dare you?
I always feel like both of them are writing way more than they are because I just like view both of their oeuvres. Oeuvre. Why do I try to speak
French? Yeah, just say it in the French.
In the same way, and I think, and I always like mix them up together. And they're separate people, and I think I like Peter David way more. But like, yeah, they have a similar vibe to me of writing everything and having like,
I think it's, well, I was gonna say like, I think like the comparison is offensive to me a little bit, also I think it's a pretty good one. It is a good comparison because they are working in a very similar mode a lot of the time.
Yeah.
I think that Peter David can settle into a more serious, kind of plotting for sure. Right. Like think of those like early McFarlane Incredible Hulk issues. Like the Hulk, you know, would vacillate between like comedy book and then like there's no real jokes in it.
Yeah.
Like there weren't particularly jokes in the Maestro, what is it? I can't remember the name of it, but where they go forward in time.
Future Imperfect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That sounds right. But yeah. So, you know, Peter David, I mean, Peter David works for me more often than he like totally just doesn't work. So, you know, that's a little different. And this is going to be an ongoing discussion in this with Dan Slott and in this episode is, you know, comedy, because it's all comedy comics we're reading today. And it's so subjective, right? Like, it's hard for me to explain in a way that like it's a good critique of comedy of just like, well, that's not funny. Right. I'm gonna try my best to explain to you why it's not funny. And I actually think some of this is funny. It was not, none of this was offensive to me, but yeah, you know, for some people they're gonna listen to, you know, me fuss a little bit and be like, I have no idea what he's talking about, like these are really clever and funny. So, you know, don't take that away from anyone. Next wave, Charlotte, what did you think about this? Did you have any preconceived notions coming into this? Did you know what the team was or what the comic book was going to be?
I knew what the team was. I think what I'd heard of it from like fans was that like it felt very different from Marvel. I think I had an expectation of it being like not in the same way, but having a similar place as Ecstatics in being a Marvel comic in Marvel Universe that doesn't have the feel of a Marvel comic. And in some ways I think it's kind of true, but like definitely not to the extent or to the success, I don't know, of Ecstatics.
Right. Ecstatics is a good comparison point to this, I think. It's like one of the closest things I could compare it to. Yeah.
In Marvel. It is like playing in the Marvel Universe, but like definitely the way you get a lot of flashbacks of the main characters interacting with other characters in the Marvel Universe that are like, it's not canon, or it's like a very exaggerated and like parody version of those characters that don't track and doesn't try to track, and is okay that it doesn't track with the rest of the Marvel Universe, because like it's very much the book is doing its own thing, but it very much feels like a parody of the Marvel Universe, but they're like, doesn't fall apart, right? Like it's not Brun Air, right? We're not there. Like no matter how much Warren Ellis says there isn't a story or anything, there is like kind of a story. Like they are kind of characters.
Well, in most of them, except for Captain Bleep, whatever the joke is there, which is such a, I'm sorry, that joke is so lame to me. The like,
yeah,
the bleeping out of swears in Marvel is one of the like more irritating things to me, because it's just such a weird, like, it just reminds you so much, like, no, this is for children, because, and it also has this weird dissonance of being like, you know, you'll have some like real ultra violence happening on page and then people will be like, God beep you. It's like, you can't say damn, like, what's happening? At the very least, when they use it, I would appreciate just like, when swears are bleeped out, I usually just don't mind it the most when I know exactly what they're saying and it's just clear exactly what they're filling in with. The thing that annoys me is when they kind of just use it to be like, aren't I being cheeky? Because, like, I could be saying any swear here. And that's the joke, is like, it's just so foul, whatever I'm saying. They do that with Machine Man here. They do it with Captain Bleep, the Captain. I'm just going to call him from now on. But anyway, besides the Captain, these are all established, if not minor,
Elsa Bloodstone might be new. She's from, like, the Bloodstones are already a thing. Elsa Bloodstone might come from this. I have to
I just assumed she was from, like, old Dracula comics or something, but...
She had her own comic in 2001. Never mind.
Called Bloodstone Number One. So, yeah, I doubt she was probably a big deal before this.
Yeah.
I mean, there's Machine Man from the Kirby comics. There's Photon, who, you know, is probably the biggest member of this team. And then Boom Boom. Boom Boom's probably, you know, recognizable to X-Men fans. And Boom Boom's pretty cool here. I like Boom Boom.
Boom Boom's fun. Yeah. And Monica Rambeau loves cups, apparently, which is...
That joke's very doofy.
I think her
seem very silly and naive.
Yeah. The ecstatics comparison doesn't help it, because it's very much not as good at doing this similar thing. But it is like the thing where none of the characters seem to like each other, but not really in a way that is rooted in character or anything. And like, it comes back to that Warren Ellis quote, I guess. But like, that still makes for more frustrating experience. Some of it is fun. Like, there is a fun to just like, cool characters and explosions and stuff. And it's like, yeah, there is nothing there, but it's not as captivating as Ecstatics. I think, like, by the sixth issue, I was, like, didn't have any curiosity to keep going. Like, none of the characters grew particularly on me. Not to the point where I'm like, oh, character assassination. Because I don't care that much about most of them, except for, like, Monica Rambeau. And it does, like, it doesn't feel like the characterizations they have here are gonna be carried on, at least not as
well. Do you know,
as abrasively?
The comic runs 6 more issues and then stops, so that's like, it's also part of my surprise that people seem to love this comic, because I'm like, that much like, how did you get this attached in 12 issues? There's just not that much to it, and like, we read half of it. I agree. I actually, you know, like, I had fun with this comic. It mostly, like, it very rarely made me roll my eyes. In general, I was just kind of like, I was vibing with it. Stuart Immonen's art is really fun. The action moves along. Warren Ellis is pretty good at not getting in his own way with too much dialogue, I think. So, like, the comics, like, feel nice and breezy, and they go down quick, and the action moves along, and there's, like, there's good creativity in the visuals, I think, which does help sell. A lot of the jokes work purely visually. A lot of the one-liners don't, like, necessarily land for me. There's a few that work, but, like, kind of... It has, like, actual jokes, which I do appreciate. It is not just a series of one-liners, which, like... There's so many comedy comics and superheroes where it's just like, oh, the joke is that we just banter, and there's no actual jokes or puns or wordplay or... timing established. It's just a series of people being like snarky for 23 pages, and every panel is full of snarky comments. We talked about that a ton, so I like that there's like visual gags and like absurd humor baked into it. You know, I liked what's his face, the
Nishiri guy,
like Dick Anger. He was, you know, like he was kind of funny in his characterization.
Oh, yeah, that's my favorite part of it. The joke with the him sitting on a big gun.
Well, that was straight out of, like, did you get the reference for that one?
No, I don't think so.
It's from Elektra, Elektra Assassin, because Nick Fury in that one sits in a giant gun for some reason. He never explains it. Frank Miller doesn't explain, but he's just sitting in a giant gun while he's, like, talking to his one of his agents or something. And this is just, like, a parody of that, where it's pointed back at him.
And it's, like, five bullets on the ground, and he's, like, Russian roulette with the huge gun. That's, like, that was very good visual comedy. And, like, everything that's going with that guy is, like, so absurd and like, over-the-top parody of Nick Fury that, like, actually tickles me. In a way that a lot of the other jokes, like, same as you. I don't think there were any jokes that were particularly grating, except for maybe the very last joke with him.
The, like, that feels like
slightly
feminist.
Transphobic.
Well, and they even specifically make fun of, like, finding a big bra of some, like, second wave feminists, some, like, very famous feminist in there.
Outside of that specific joke, most were fine to me. But, like, some, like, most of the jokes with that guy, like, really tickled me. It's very Monster of the Week. Like, the team going on and tackling different monsters and stuff of the Marvel Universe. But none of those storylines particularly grabbed me. The stuff going on with the Beyond Corporation and stuff, that's like a non, like, it's not particularly playing with interesting, I don't know, sci-fi ideas or stuff.
Does get by on, like, competent action, right? Like, or, like, not just competent, I don't mean that in a derogatory way, like, it gets by on, like, moving through fun little
effective,
like, I mean, Ellis, there's a million artist critiques of Ellis that I have, but, like, he almost always nails just kind of, like, basic structuring and plotting of a comic book it moves along and it moves well and it reads, like, swiftly. And I don't mean that in just, like, it's lightweight. I mean that, like, he actually has, like, a smart command over, you know, like, pacing of a comic, which is harder to do than you might think. Like, even the comics that we've read by him that I don't love, like Extremis or what else? We read some of his Fantastic Four, I think, over on the Ultimate side.
Didn't he do the Galactus trilogy or Ultimates?
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know what.
Yeah, I don't always love, like, his ideas, and his tone certainly sometimes grates on me. He was very good at, you know, just pacing out the book. I mean, my big issue with this, and he, like, is embracing it here, no plot lines, characters, emotions, nothing whatsoever. You can't do that and have something, like, that's not a plus side. Like, characters and emotions are good, and they're good for comedy, right? Like, you get better jokes from building up characters and then feeling like your audience has a deeper understanding of them, and not just characters when they're being funny, like, characters when they're being sad or angry or hurt or whatever, all the, like, varying emotions, like, you play in that realm. Like, some of the funniest jokes are built up off of, you know, understanding of a character's vanity. And then we talked about it, we just recorded extra issues about Bone, and, like, so many of the great jokes of Bone are built on understanding a character. And so, like, when the characters never ever pause to have a serious moment, it does detract from, like, the comedy of it all, because, you know, it does feel a little bit more superficial. Like, you could just swap in, you know, Werewolf by Night for any of these characters, and it would be like, okay, it's just now a werewolf's there doing the same kind of snarky bit. And, like, even if I think the jokes are okay, it's never gonna, like, this comic's never going to win my whole heart, because I need more than this. You know who does this well, who does the, and they're not going for comedy as much, but the kind of, like, big balls to the wall action, is Daniel Warren Johnson.
Ooh, yeah.
Like, who can fold in huge, insane, like, the biggest, stupidest comic book premises, in, like, Wonder Woman Dead Earth and Do a Power Bomb and Murder Falcon, right? Like, Do a Power Bomb is about, like, what if hell held a a professional wrestling tournament to like win the soul of your dead loved ones, and you're like wrestling giant orangutans and stuff. And it's also a comic that's like deeply rooted in its character and is like so emotional and like so invested in his character's like emotional journeys, but also has the most like badass metal action scenes you've ever seen. I mean, you know, no one does it like Daniel Warren Johnson, so it's not much of a critique to just say like do it like the best to do it. But like, you know, you can have both. You can have big crazy action, you can balance, like, I would call, like, I'm talking about comic book artists and writers who create like pure comic books in that kind of like giddy, you know, like a pure visual excitement sense, I guess, like harkening back to like the pulpy, early pulpy like genre days of it, but also elevate it into something a little bit more human, I guess.
Yeah,
right, like you can do that, you can do both, it doesn't have to be one or the other. So him just being like, you know, this has no characters or emotion, it's like, yeah, okay, well, that's not gonna work as well as, you know, You are cutting the legs out from under your comic, I think. That being said, I don't want to sound like I'm too hard on this. Like, I had fun with this. I will probably read the next 6 issues. And I was, like, mildly disappointed when I was like, wow, this only went for 12 issues. Because as far as comedy comics that we've read go, it's one of the better ones.
It's one of the better ones, yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Besides Ecstatics. Like, you know, Ecstatics is still king in my book. But
is Ecstatics, like, it's less of a just comedy comic than this. It's satirical, I guess.
I mean, it doesn't have, but I mean, I guess like the whole, the like the definition of what a comedy comic in the world of Marvel, what that means is so skewed because 90% of the time it's, and when it is, it's just like a banter fest where it's just like, oh, that means we don't have characters. We just have like quip machines, you know?
Yeah.
And they're not telling jokes, they're just doing quips, you know? Like, the situations are just there to produce, you know, the specific quips of the moment, I guess. You know what? Like, Dan Slott's Spider-Man and Human Torch, like, that had mostly quips, but it also still had a few jokes. Like, you know, John Byrne is still, like... I hate being the guy, because everyone's like, you're the John Byrne defender. But, like, when he wrote comedy, he wrote, like, real comedy in his comics that had like set up and payoff for jokes, and it was all rooted in characters, like Great Lakes Avengers. They're really funny and they're like rooted in good solid jokes. They're good jokes, come on, those are good characters.
they're all good jokes.
And all right, so the She-Hulk, we're going to talk about Dan Slott. It's a little bit more what I was saying about quips. Like, there's less jokes here, I think. There's a few, for sure, but he definitely is leaning into more the kind of just, like, the comedy is in the snappiness of the dialogue, which I don't actually think is that snappy, but also does get character, and, like, the characters have, you know, struggles and emotions that are outside of, like, the jokes, and I actually think more so here than you were on the episode when we did the first batch, right? Was it?
Yeah, I was.
You've read those, yeah. So, like, I actually think he's kind of more successful here.
Yeah,
with She-Hulk, I think he kind of found, like...
better balance.
And better footing with the character. The character seems a little less erratic, or, like, has better tonal control with, like, She-Hulk herself. And with the little, like, stories that are happening, like, they feel a little more grounded. They have more time to breathe. I think, like... the 7 issues we read here, most of them had like continuing stories, like one to the next, like at least like 2 issues for each one, which gave, like, it didn't feel like they were trying to like rush a whole premise of a sci-fi comedy premise into one issue. It worked okay. I don't know, like, while I didn't mind this, I didn't, at the end of it, I didn't feel like I was champing at the bit to keep going, but like I did have an okay time with these. I don't know, what do you think?
Yeah, it's just good enough, isn't it?
I know what you mean. It's not like I read it and go, I wish it was something else. I'm just kind of like, this doesn't, like, it doesn't grab me. It doesn't have enough to, like, I don't know what I want out of this, but it's not this, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, I definitely agree that it's way more effective than the initial batch of issues we read. I think better balance between the like kind of sci-fi superhero plots. The courtroom scenes with superheroes are like kind of, I don't know, I like that feels like something that's I haven't seen before, right? A combination of generals that is a good concept, and that is like at the for being so much of the center of that character, it feels like that's a thing Dan Slott invented, of meshing those two ideas of courtroom drama and superheroes together. And it is a good fun idea. I think especially the time travel, like the time traveling thing, I didn't care at all about the actual plot of the time traveler going back, getting killed and stuff. But like the idea of a trial of like someone pleading self-defense because the person they killed was going to kill them in the future, that's a fun idea to play in a costume setting. I don't think it's like that interesting in the execution, but it is like playing with that kind of fun idea that like make me want to keep reading to see if one of them's gonna actually hit. It is kind of fun. I think it's like I can see someone who's really really into like Marvel continuity and stuff having a lot of fun with like the Two Gun Kid and like the references to Avengers history and like time traveling stuff. I get that, and I think that's like something that like, I can have fun with. Just like here, it's not referencing that like I am that familiar and like interested in. But like he does play a lot with Marvel continuity and referencing, kind of hinting, and referencing like small moments in, you know, West Coast Avengers, for example. And like a lot of the TVA stuff here is has fun with that. It is weird to see the TVA in a Marvel comic post Loki TV show, because it's like it's a big nothing in Marvel comics for how huge it is. It seems that it is going to be in the MCU. Well,
you know what? You're actually kind of unlocking something for me talking about this, because I'm trying to pinpoint like what is it about this comic where I'm just like I don't really want to keep reading. Like I'm not disliking my time with it, but like there's nothing here that's grabbing me to want me to keep going. And I do think I don't know how to pinpoint the like exact root of it, but I think it is a lack of stakes for both like the characters and the like plotting stakes of like danger. Like She-Hulk, the two issues with the TVA are that she's going to be erased from history. I never once worried that was gonna I mean, you know,
yeah.
Is Captain America going to die? No, of course not. But, like, can a comic make me worry that he's going to die? Or at least feel like, I don't know how he's going to get out of this. Yeah. Like, a really good comic can make me be like, Spider-Man's toast. Like, he has no way of dealing with this threat. Like, and, you know, I know in my heart, Spider-Man will deal with it. And he's not going to die here because, you know, the nature of Marvel Comics. But, like, a comic can still make you feel those stakes. I guess I never felt that with any of this. I never felt the emotional stakes of Jen Walters, nor the actual like superhero stakes for She-Hulk. So I think, and that's like I'm trying to figure out how to. We'll talk about the Star Fox stuff, Star Fox Eros sexual assault court case. I surprisingly didn't find it like particularly offensive, but I also felt like it was kind of a whiff. And you know, I'm trying to bounce. I'm like,
it goes nowhere.
There's nothing here that I'm like, this isn't bad. It didn't, like, kind of miss the target entirely, but it also, like, didn't feel, I don't want to say it doesn't feel serious, because it's, I don't think, like, he's being glib either, necessarily. Like, Dan Slott is being, like, too glib with the topic or any of this. It's just, there's a lack of, I don't know, maybe, like, tone.
I mean, I think part of it is the context of tackling that kind of issue in a kind of comedy Marvel comics that like I don't think lends, like I don't think it can't be done in an interesting way. I don't know that this is the title to do it, or if it is, that issue's gotta feel different. Like those Greg Horn covers on two issues of talking about sexual assault. And like also
I choose not to pin that on Dan Slott. I choose to assume that that was some kind of editorial decision, because the comic is mostly not horny for her, which I actually kind of, you know, I don't mind when it is in some regards, but like in these comics it would be inappropriate. Yeah. And it mostly isn't, like, especially what's his name, Juan Bobilo, sorry I'm mispronouncing that, but his art like definitely doesn't like objectify her.
Well, it's both the covers and I think specifically the letters page from the last issue we read, I think issue 7, has like, I have to check because I didn't actually check if it was Dan Slott talking or an editor, but like either Dan Slott or the editor was like responding to letters of fans being really glad that Star Fox is in the comic, being like, oh yeah, we all love Star Fox, he's a fun guy, I'm glad everyone's glad to have him here, like, and it, in a way that is like very much having fun and being fans of Star Fox as a like cool fun character that we can't wait to see back. in a way that is very weird with the actual content of the comic, which is Star Fox being accused of sexual assault, and like the resolution of the comic not innocenting him. Innocenting? That's not a word.
It's innocenting. No, it's finding him not guilty, I guess.
Yeah, freeing him of that charge.
Vindicating.
Right?
Vindicating.
And from what I've seen, like, I kind of like, the issue ends with him being like transported over to Titan and like escaping human justice, but again not in a way that confirms or denies that he's guilty or not, which like I think can be okay because like it is a thing with
those. Oh my god, sorry,
like,
I'm reading the letters page. I didn't read this is crazy. Oh my
yeah, god. It's awful, isn't it? Is it Dan Slott or is it an editor?
No, it's Aubrey Sitterson, who is one of the assistant editors. Sorry, I'm going to read this because it's nuts. Welcome back, all you Star Fox fanatics. Now I know how it looks after reading this issue. Some people would have you believe that Eros the Titan is some kind of, it pains me to say it, criminal, and that he's acted inappropriately during time on Earth. But these people clearly haven't met the real Star Fox. The first Star Fox I know. You see, Star Fox came to me shortly after the events you see here and explained the entire thing to us. Our girl Shulky was, as much as I love her, blinded by jealousy, upset that while she's stuck with a guy who has to use flea shampoo, there's a dish like Star Fox running around living it up. Apparently a lot of our readers are with me on this one. Look at the results from our first annual She-Hulk Hunk Off. And then they have a bunch of votes, which Star Fox won the hunkiest. That's right, in a stunning upset, the writing candidate Star Fox secured his victory and was more than happy to strike a pose for us. What a crazy cap to that comic. Oh my god. I mean, the comic is pretty clear that he is a rapist. Like, even if he doesn't get found guilty by the court, like, the ending is that, like, a criminal escaped. He's been, you know, like, drugging women, and it's like, he's doing it in front of you.
But
there's
so,
no, like,
Yeah, it is like nothing is dissuading from that, but in a way that like you can very much imagine like some other comic very easily saying like, no, that didn't happen. It was like he didn't actually do it, or it was an impersonator, or it was something.
Sure, I guess.
I looked at the next issue and it just goes over to another thing with Civil War. Like that doesn't get picked back up until later. And I looked at the Wikipedia page. And, like, he gets innocented of raping She-Hulk, but, like, the initial charge never...
word.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
No, it's funny.
That charge, like, gets, like, that is, like, he didn't do that. The initial charge, like, that doesn't get addressed, apparently.
Well, I want to say, like, I did feel like it was kind of almost a bold move to say, like, hey, this, you know, maybe beloved character, because it makes sense.
Well, I agree.
It's like he's got the power of Purple Man, who, you know, a rapist, and then he's got the same power, and then he's specifically known for being like a Casanova, and then you know, it aligns, I think. And I'm you know, I don't have that much affection for Star Fox, so I'm not like, I would be fine.
I would be fine with doing that to that character, but like, then that has to be the character, right? Which it isn't. Yeah. Star Fox is still a superhero in current Marvel comics. I actually kind of like the most recent version of Star Fox since Jen Gillen did stuff with him in Judgment Day recently. He's kind of like David Bowie-esque. But like,
I'm reading the Wikipedia page now, and it does. She-Hulk itself, the comic, keeps going with this in the next like handful of issues. So I think it takes a break for Civil War, and it comes back. So like I guess we can't really weigh on like how it deals with it.
Sure. Yeah.
Within this comic, though, I actually don't mind. Like, nothing happens in this comic that I kind of think is like totally distasteful, unless you're like a Star Fox fan and you're like, "How dare you do this to my fave?" But I don't know.
It just does kind of feel like it's going nowhere, which is kind of, yeah.
I mean, it literally ends on kind of a like, "Oh, and he got swept away." But I guess, you know, they are continuing to deal with it like immediately. Yeah. So I guess if you're curious, keep reading up to like issue 13, because they keep talking about it. Thanos gets involved.
Yeah, in a weird way. Yeah.
If they did that to Thanos, I'd be, you know, like he can kill half the universe, but don't turn him into a weird sex creep. I don't want that.
I mean, you're joking, but yeah, kinda. That's the kind of villain that I prefer be evil in like totally fictional and sci-fi ways.
Sure. Yeah, yeah.
It would be weird if Doom just started sexually assaulting people. Like that, it'd be less fun to be a fan of that character, right? Like you can't be a fan of a villain that is like an actual real life villain. In that way.
Yeah. True. We talk about that all the time. Yeah. You know, when you veer into, you know, outside of the realm of comic book silliness. Anyway, I mean, my issues with these are more that like, I guess the seriousness of both the Star Fox stuff and just like in general, the stakes of the She-Hulk comic don't land for me. And that does keep me at arm's length of getting like too invested. And I think it just has have something to do with like Dan Slott's ability to like, to gain my investment in these characters. Cause She-Hulk's a character I like, a character I am like primed to kind of get on board with. It's pretty pretty subjective. People might like this run. You know, if someone was like, "No, I really like this run, I'm really into it," I see it. I don't think it's crazy. I wouldn't level like that this is a bad comic by any means. And this is probably one of the better Dan Slott comics we've read so far.
I don't know what the competition would be.
Yeah, I mean, it would be the past She-Hulk, which I liked okay also. Oh, the other thing I did want to talk about with this, though, is it's, you know, you were talking about its like references to continuity. It does do that in a way that that is just not appealing to me at all. I don't mind comics being a fan of continuity, and I'm so glad I have this as a specific example, but Brubaker's Captain America is that, like, that's exactly how I like it done, which is, like, digging up the past. It's kind of like the difference between, like, if you're writing a comic and you're a big fan of these old comics, what I want is not you to... I don't want you to like just tell me that you're a fan of the old comics in your comic.
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah. That's what Dan Slott does. He literally like has characters hold up issues that he likes and say like, "Oh man, isn't the Two-Gun Kid cool? Like, I know him from this comic and that comic." Like, it's so clearly like meant to be like a stand-in for comic book fans talking about comic books, and that is like, it's so like compromised to me as like a piece of art compared to like Brubaker's Captain America, which is also clearly a big fan of that stuff, but I want it like integrated into the comic and like honored, right? It's like take the core of what you love about a comic book and then like find that and recreate it and evolve it, and you know, like the best homages are not just like recreations or like you just kind of like showing off that you love something. Like, that's pretty boring to me. Like, who else does that? I feel like I just had another example in mind, but I mean, Mark Waid does it with Fantastic Four a bit. Like, he's somewhere right in the middle of these two for me. Like, when you kind of feel that like it's not like becoming like a literal text homage where like the characters are speaking about their favorite comics, but it's so clear that the comic is just trying to like recreate and capture the magic of what they love versus like building on it and trying to like take the core of something that they like and building something new. So I think Brubaker's Cap, Immortal Hulk, which we'll talk about in forever, like Immortal Hulk is such a love letter to Peter David's Hulk run. But at the same time, if you've never read Peter David's Hulk, you wouldn't be like, well, I don't know what's going on. Like, I don't understand all these references. Like, it feels like it's building this big new thing. But then if you go back and read Peter David, you're like, oh, it's all here. And he's, you know, taking these ideas and distilling, you know, like what he found magical in them.
Yeah. I have a terrible analogy. Then Slut She-Hulk is very much a quote tweet of the issues it's referencing, right? It's just literally just tweeting it, quoting it, and like adding one thing onto it. That is
he's gonna block you on Twitter just for saying that.
I think we have
some people in our Slack who proudly proclaim that they have been blocked by Dan Slott.
Everyone's been blocked. I might have been blocked. Yeah. I don't know if I've been blocked by Dan Slott. I should check.
I'm gonna double check with my Marvelous Year account. I don't tweet about Dan Slott very often.
Oh, me neither. But like, yeah. I think he blocks. Like a lot of people I've seen are like blocked by him. Are like I don't know who he is. Or, yeah.
No, I'm not blocked. If you liked something that was critical of him, I guess.
Yeah.
Anyway, it doesn't matter. I don't really know. I'm curious to like he's gonna have a huge long tenure at Marvel and he's gonna do
especially
Spider-Man
at Spidey.
Forever.
Like he does Spidey.
Oh my god.
He's still doing Spidey, not amazing, but like he's doing a Spider-Boy mini and a Superior Spider-Man mini at the same time, which is like oh boy, insane.
Wow, this is a crazy run. Yeah,
I'm looking at it now. Yeah.
So we'll be talking about that in a while. It's starting in 2008. So, I'm making fun of the guy a lot. Part of that is I think his like online persona, but you know, I don't actually know. I shouldn't jump in on what I don't know. The comics are so far okay. I have read Sarah Century wrote a big critique. Oh, no, it wasn't Sarah Century. She wrote for Comic Book Herald a list of, like, the best She-Hulk stories. Somebody else, I'm sorry, I don't remember who it is, wrote for Comic Book Herald a review of the entire Dan Slott She-Hulk run. It was pretty critical of it, and most of the stuff they were critical of we haven't fully seen yet. So if you're going to keep reading She-Hulk, you know, maybe after that, go check out Comic Book Herald's review of Dan Slott's She-Hulk. It's pretty good.
It's by Vishal Gulapalli.
Okay, yeah, thank you. It was interesting, and I was kind of like, especially with it has to a lot to do with like the sexual politics of the comic.
Yeah.
So when the Star Fox stuff happened, I was like wincing because I was expecting it to be worse, and then it turned out to be, I think, just kind of not even mediocre, a little like weightless, but not offensive. There's certainly some stuff. But you know, Dan Slott's somebody that I'm like, maybe someday he can kind of like figure out a tone that works for me. Like, he's not that far from being in my good graces.
We're still, like almost 10 years away from it. But I am curious about rereading Superior Spider-Man, which, like, is one of my favorite Spider-Man runs. See how much it holds up. I think I definitely think it's some of his best work. I quite like that run. I'm curious to see what I think of it when we come back to it with MMY.
And he's just starting at Marvel at this point. Like, She-Hulk in 2004 was the beginning of him working there. He had done some stuff before, but that was really, like, the start of him working, like, doing regular comic book work, monthly or twice or three times a month comic book work, right? So, like, he's got room to grow, and I'm hopeful. Last thing we want to talk about here. It's The Thing, number 8, also by Dan Slott. It is added by our Patreon backer, Justin. If you want to add stuff onto Patreon, listeners, it's our $10 a month level. You get to add something to, like, every Marvel year. And then, you know, if you end up backing us for a while and you don't add stuff, sometimes you can add, like, a bigger run. You've seen that recently. The Thing, number 8, by Dan Slott. It's the last issue of, like, this 8-issue run. That happened, and it is a poker issue. And I think it's kind of interesting to have, I added that, what is it, Spectacular Spider-Man from Paul Jenkins in 2004 for the Dean's List, which was also a poker issue that strongly featured the Thing in a lot of the same characters. So kind of weird for Dan Slott to like just like that just came out, and for him to just be like, yeah, I'll do a poker issue, but like have less of a concept.
Yeah, I'd be fine with like
it's a bad comparison.
Marvel putting out a poker, like the Thing's poker issue, poker game issue, like annual every year, and like giving it to different creator and doing a different story.
But
this is not as good.
It's weirdly unfocused on
the actual poker game
itself. Like it's kind of just an excuse for like him to tell a bunch of like one page stories with some of his like fave characters. You get, you know, like the Impossible Man, and you get who else is
Squirrel
in here?
Girl.
Gets a little like, yeah, right. Squirrel Girl gets show, which is fun. It's nice to see Squirrel Girl. Yeah. Like I liked that little short with Squirrel Girl and the Thing. It's fine. And you know what? Like I like this issue. I don't have big complaints about this issue. I actually thought it was pretty cute. Like the jokes were okay. The little flashbacks were fun. It just having just read that other poker issue, which I love. I love the like the Kingpin showing up and the like the comedy it mines out of that. Like I think really works. And also having it be like six specific people in the room. Like here's six superheroes and their relationship to the poker table and each other while they're playing. I think is really fun. It's like every Marvel hero is here. So you get little tiny glimpses. Like I like Janet Van Dyne cheats. She goes mini and, you know, gives Ant-Man or what, Yellow Jacket? I don't know what he's in his black and yellow costume. He cheats. God, I'm having a hard time like explaining this. Tells him what the other players. I was gonna say cheats with him, but that's not like
helps him cheat.
Got really tongue tied there.
There's a joke. I want to go back to She-Hulk really quickly because you just reminded me of a joke in it of She-Hulk going to different Avengers to like vouch for Star Fox's character. And she goes to Hank Pym, who's like, you want me to be a witness for a sexual assault charge? Which is like an actual like kind of funny dark joke. Like, yeah, that's not the guy you want for this. that page was actually kind of fun, of like all of the female characters being like, ooh, nope, I have something else to do. And Cap being like,
except for Janet Van Dyne.
Except for Janet Van Dyne, which is, ooh, bad luck, Janet. Very willing to defend a random guy. Anyways, just remind me of that one joke that
the thing that's like very sweet about this is thing, Ben Grimm has his his bar mitzvah sweet. Here. Yeah, I like the bar mitzvah a lot.
Yeah, it's cute.
It's just a nice little moment. You know, it almost feels like that should have been the issue instead of. It's like this little side story that's like three or four pages, and then it's like the poker game is the after party. But it's still nice to see. I feel like someone could flesh that out, you know. And it's I like the rabbi being like, we figured it out, and it's been 13 years since you became the Thing. So technically, like you're ready for your bar mitzvah,
and then being like, so glad he's saying yes. He's like, yeah, I guess. It's kind of, it is cute. It is like, most of it is just, it's cute. It's not like super,
it does
super interesting or anything.
It ends with, it ends with a weird joke.
One
of the lamest jokes I've ever seen, which is Alicia being like, the Thing loses to the Great Lakes defenders, or Great Lakes champions now. And, which I did like that as a joke, everyone being like, you can't have our name.
Yeah.
And then the Thing's like disappointed, and Alicia whispers in his ear, like, oh, maybe instead we could. Ch-ch-ch-ch-ch. And he's like, all right, everyone out. And then Alicia starts sweeping all the poker cards into her purse, which I did see happening. Like, I was like, that's weird. Why is she in the background just putting all the poker cards in her purse? It's a weird thing to do. And then it's because the Thing at the end is kicking everyone out, and he's like, well, it's because Alicia holds all the cards, and she's like holding her purse up.
Too much work for a joke that isn't funny enough.
That doesn't even make sense as a joke. It's boy. Oof. And then it's like Spider-Man and Wolverine, and they're just like, that's it. And then the narration says, that's it. And that is a joke that I hate. Because it was just like, yeah, there's no story to this issue. Yeah. So that's it, huh? And just acknowledging that doesn't make it better.
Yeah. Mostly my enjoyment was like, yeah, it's kind of cute. And then I understood a reference of Al Ewing makes in Immortal Hulk, where the Thing quotes the same story of Job from the Torah. I'm like, oh, that's mm-hmm. that's where he got that idea. And that's it. Yeah, it's just kind of cute.
It's funny because it does feel like I feel like you could say that all the little meta-textual winking like that is like paying homage to like Lee and Kirby, who used to do this stuff a lot. But it also, to me, feels like kind of just like it's not expanding on it.
Yeah.
So it does just feel like being cute and winking, or attempting to be cute and like doing a lot of winking in a way that I find annoying, because I'm just like, yeah, I've seen this before done better, you know, and it doesn't read to me. Like, it's not like I'm opposed to that kind of stuff. If it's done well, it just feels like. Yeah, being done well is not part of the equation here. It's just enough that it is for some people. Like, just that, like, the joke is being made and it's cheeky is sufficient. And I kind of am like, even in, like, 2006, like, I've seen a lot of this before. It's not like this is just so novel that it can carry itself just on the novelty of the, you know, bit itself. So, I don't know. I feel like I'm complaining about this issue. This issue is totally, I liked
it's
it.
Fine.
It
was, yeah, it's you know, totally
like I said, it's cute. It's cute in the way when my mother sees a movie and she says, yeah, it was cute. And I'm like, oh, okay. So like nice and inoffensive and not challenging, yeah. Which is, yeah, what this is. It's fine. I appreciate actually Justin adding it, out of like a lot of the Patreon backed stuff we get added. This is, I like little stuff like this. So thank you, Justin.
It does feel like kind of a slightly continuity relevant thing of the Thing having his bar mitzvah. Like, it is, isn't quite on the level of mm-hmm. like a Reed and Sue get married type of issue, but it is like, yeah, it's kind of a big thing for the character. Also, it's kind of a big thing for the character to be recognized as Jewish. I think like that was the case in the Wade and Ringo issues where he dies, I think. I don't remember quite. But like, I think that's a thing Marvel danced around for a long time of like not kind of acknowledging that the Thing is Jewish. It feels kind of like a big, milestone issue, but it doesn't actually feel that way reading it, which is weird.
Milestone is DC, Charlotte.
God damn. Yeah. I'm glad to have read it. Funny. That's you.
I really liked that. That was very your sinister, stupid guy yep. laugh joke. It's really good. Okay, well, those were the comics.
Yeah,
you know, it was a it's an interesting batch because they're all pretty like inessential, I guess.
Yeah,
but,
inessential comedy. You know, comedy books. It but, is like, nice to see some enough, like yeah. kind of focus on comedy books from Marvel. I think Next Wave is the most successful at it, definitely.
Yeah.
And even that, I'm not like.
I'm almost like it. Disappointed that Next Wave, you know, that given the love that Next Wave gets, I kind of assumed that it was going to be like a 40 issue run or something that would like get to build, right, and like get to turn into something. And you know, reading the first six, I was like, yeah, this is pretty good.
Yeah.
Like, I you know, maybe I'll keep reading this to like see where it goes. It only getting 12 issues. I'm like, all right, well, this wasn't good enough that the next six issues are going to turn it into.
I mean, maybe it really finds its footing in the back adore. Half. I don't know, but I can't imagine it being.
The back half of the 1 year that it ran.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, you know, comics happen. Can do that. Like, so, some of the comics, we all the Daniel Warren Johnson stuff we talked about is 4 to 6 issues long. So, anyway, if you haven't read Do a Powerbomb yet, I know you have, Charlotte, but listeners.
It's incredible.
If you haven't read Duo Powerbomb yet, go read that comic. It's so good.
Even like, if you want to read some Marvel, Beta Ray Bill, his Beta Ray Bill mini is really, really fun as well.
Oh, yeah. Beta Ray Bill's really good, too. Yeah.
Super cool.
Yeah. It's a fun comic. Tons of great art there.
Yeah.
His Transformers is really fun right now. I mean, he's getting shots, but I still think he's like totally underrated and undervalued, you know? I'd love to see, I mean, I don't know if he'd be interested, but I'd love to see what he would do with like a long-term run of something, you know, give him like an actual book instead of like a 6 or 4 issue mini.
I know Dave fan-casted him on X-Force for the new X-Men stuff that's going to be coming out, and I think that's a fun idea.
Yeah. But the thing is, like, you know, he works in stuff that you wouldn't like his Wonder Woman taps into Wonder Woman. Like, he gets the character of Wonder Woman in a way that I think very few people often do. Like, he really, really gets to the core of that character in a really insane circumstance with her. So, yeah, Dead Earth is such a great comic. Next up is Annihilation, a comic I don't know anything about. Big event.
Hell yeah.
I'm going to try to read some of the tie-ins, because on the list right now we have Prologue and 1 through 6. So I probably should read a little bit more than just 7 issues for the
episode. It is definitely as far as I'm aware, it's more self-contained than, like, the big events going on Earth, right? Like Civil War and House of M get an endless stream of tie-ins. So, like, those cosmic events are more streamlined just by virtue of there being less titles in that setting. So yeah, I'd be curious to try and do the full Annihilation.
I'm not gonna do the full Annihilation. I can just tell you.
But like, are there any tie-ins? I don't even know.
It's all like. But it's like Annihilation Nova 1 through 4, Annihilation Ronin 1 through 4.
Oh, it's
Annihilation
minis.
Super Scroll 1 through 4. Yeah, it's a bunch of minis. Yeah, it's actually not that. It's maybe 30 issues for the whole thing. But then we read the Drax the Destroyer, you know, one of the lead-ins to that, and I thought it was a real stinker. The Earthfall.
Yeah,
isn't that what we read? Yeah, and that was very boring. So. Which doesn't bode that well, because I think that's whoever wrote that.
Is doing Annihilation.
Trying to remember. Yeah, Keith Giffen is doing all of Annihilation. So we'll see. I don't really know what it's about. I assumed it had to do with Annihilus. I thought that's what it was, but I'm guessing I'm wrong. I thought it was a...
I think it does, but I'm... Same here. I haven't read it, so I have no idea, but I'm really curious. It is a huge part of... like, there is a whole series of events that starts with Annihilation, like, goes into Annihilation Conquest and stuff, War of Realms, War of Kings, like, a lot of... there is a Marvel era of events just set in the cosmic stuff that I know basically nothing about, and is, like, probably my
War
biggest...
of Realms? Isn't that, like,
War of Realms is more recent, isn't it? There's War of Kings, and there's another War of something, I think. There's a bunch of cosmic Marvel events that are kicked off by this, and I'm curious. That's it.
Cool. Me too, because I like cosmic, but it basically has been only
Starlin.
Yeah. So it'll be. I mean, I know like Ewing really like puts his stamp on cosmic Marvel, and then what Abnett and is it Lester
Lenning?
Yeah, Abnett and someone.
Abnett and Lenning.
Yeah, something like that. I know, you know, they become big cosmic guys with the Guardians and stuff. So, yeah, I'm interested to see somebody else, you know, potentially run with the cosmic stuff.
Yeah.
As much as I do love Starlin. All right, well, thank you, Charlotte.
Yeah,
good talk.
Thank you. I'm surprised we Always talked a pleasure. This long about these comics.
Oh, yeah, we just hit an hour. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
If you want to support our show, patreon.com/mymarvelousyear. Reviews over on Apple Podcast are always appreciated. I love to read them. I check that like at least once a week to see if we got some new reviews. We got a couple good ones. I just want to read this one real quick by Ad396. Title, great. Description, the alpha flight of comic podcasts, you might say. Thank you, Ad396. Yeah, so I read them all.
That's insanely insulting, and I'm blocking you.
Ad396, you're blocked. Charlotte and I do our sideshow called Extra Issues. We do 6 months early access over on Patreon, and then it comes out in a public feed. Right now on the public feed, we're starting out our Fantagraphics series. So the 8-Ball issue or episode just came out. We're doing a whole episode about Stoner comics next month, and then a bunch of cool stuff. You can check that all out on that public feed or on our spreadsheet. You can get through Patreon. If you are backing us on Patreon, we are finishing up Jeff Smith's Bone. So the comic we just read, we're doing one other series by Jeff Smith, and then we're moving into doing kind of the Sandman universe. So we're going to read all of Sandman, a bunch of the spin-offs, and then Lucifer, which is like just as long as Sandman, 75 issues. So Charlotte and I are very excited to to cover that comic. Yeah, it's a great show. We have a ton of fun doing that show and get good guests.
Yeah, I'm really happy with the Bowen episode we just did, and I'm super glad.
I am too. Yeah, that was a fun. Yeah, I mean, I'm glad you had a great time with that comic. That comic's it's a good time. It's such an easy comic to just hand to like literally anyone. I think that's one of its charm. So. Yeah. Our music is by Disasterpiece, and thank you, Disasterpiece. We'll see you next year.
See you next year.
We'll be right back.